Okay. My name's Ed M., and I'm an addict in recovery. And I don't even know what the hell I'm doing here. And I have had that problem for several years. First of all, I want to thank this committee for what they tried to do here today. Don't let this not, you need to look at this when it's over with and you say, oh God, I'm glad it's over with, I'll never do that again, but don't let that happen to you. This should be the first annual meeting because no one else has done that to the history of this program. And if you, the problem, you look at all these old friends of mine up here that have passed away and my heart was just fluttering because I saw a bunch of people I miss very much, and I saw people I've disliked for 50 years. And I'm glad they're gone home. At least they're out of my hair. But you know, there's something to do about this program that you have to understand. If you want it done, you got to do it yourself. And thank you guys for doing it yourself, because that's how things get accomplished in Narcotics Anonymous. And don't get disappointed. Our first World Convention, we didn't have much more than this. And that was way back in 71, but that's his story, not mine. Let's see. I think we're supposed to talk about from 53 to 70, but I've got a different story. See, my first NA meeting was 1949. How many people was alive in 49? Let alone in, hey, there's a couple hands up there. Thank you, brother. Yeah, well, and I see the bastard they brought at me on that picture there, Danny C. We're in Lexington together in 49. We're in Lexington together in 46 and 47, too. And I was 14 years old, my first NA meeting, you know, and I didn't think it had anything I want, and it didn't. I had to go do my thing, like spend the next 11 years and three of them on death row and the last 8 and a half in Alcatraz. You know, I had things to do. I thought I had things to do. Well, that's what happens to dope fiends. And we got things we got to do, but someone doesn't want us to do it. And they end up locking us up. And they locked me up my last time. I had triple life, one on top of the other, and it took me 8 years to get the beat in the Supreme Court. And I got out off the rock and took a little barge over here to San Francisco, and I found my mummy that night. You know, most guys that get out of the joint want a good meal, decent food, and certainly get laid. But I didn't want any of that shit. I wanted heroin. We didn't even call it in heroin in that day. We call it hoss, smack, H. I don't know what the hell they were talking about when they talked about heroin. We didn't use them terms when I was using. But anyways, I found it, and it took me 7 months to get back to the penitentiary again. That was in 1962. Sure enough, I went to my next NA meeting. A guy by the name of Wes Foss had met Jimmy Kay down in Los Angeles, and he brought the program. He was an AA member, and he brought the program to Walla Walla Penitentiary on, September 14th, 1962. And the caseworker said, you know, I think you've got a drug problem. Seems like the only time you're not in the penitentiary, you're using dope. And I've been using since I was 13. And I've been using heroin since 13, but I've been on pills since I was 8 because I was in the mental hospital because I was diagnosed as a childhood schizophrenic. They didn't know how fucking sick I really was. But enough where they done a frontal lobotomy on me when I was 8 years old to find out what made this kid tick, because I was a ward of the state and they could use me as a guinea pig. But that was fine. I found heroin and everything was all right. See, drugs never hurt me one damn bit. I loved it. I still do, but I can't do it because they keep putting me in the fucking penitentiary. Yeah. So I decided to quit. That was in 1962 at Walla Walla. And I became, like all the time, first meeting I ever went to, I became his secretary. And I started writing Jimmy Kay, and Jimmy became my sponsor when I was in the joint, okay? And I got out of prison in 64, and Jimmy says, you gotta come down to help us start NA here in Los Angeles. Well, no one else wanted me out here but him, so I came here. That's how I got involved with NA, because I didn't know anyone wanted me anywhere except him. So I took a bus, and I already knew Chuck Dietrich, too, because I was writing him the same time. He was my backup. You know, $50 in a set of fucking khakis, you ain't got much of a chance to do anything when you get out of the penitentiary. So anyways, I know Chuck Dietrich had a bed at Synanon, and I said, well, if I can't do anything else, I'll go there. And I got to Los Angeles, and I called Chuck, and he said, well, I'd like to, I said, Chuck, I'm in downtown on Skid Row at the bus station. I need a ride out to Santa Monica. I didn't even know what the hell Santa Monica was. And he says, we don't give addicts rides. If you want a ride to come in and live in here, you get your own damn ride. I said, fuck you. I got a problem with my language. I'm sorry, but you'll have to live with it, you know. I might even say like really nasty words like God and Jesus, and I mean, I can really fuck up your meeting, okay? And your recovery too. But anyways, that's not a joke because I'm a Christ lover. That's what I am today. I used to be stupid old Jew boy, put stuff in my arm. What a difference in my fucking life. Anyways, when I got to the bus station, I called the second guy, I called Jimmy, and said, I'll be right down. And I didn't know he lived way up in San Fernando Valley. And that fucking asshole lived in Santa Monica. That's only half the distance, you know? Jimmy shows up with an old pickup truck, and he's got another addict with him by the name of Pepe. They are all dirty and filthy with coveralls on. They've been painting somewhere. And the pickup truck, I don't believe, was going to make it back to his house. And I said, if that's what NA got to offer, I don't want nothing to do with this shit. I'm a fucking pimp. I used to wear nice clothes, good shoes, and drive me a fucking Cadillac. These guys are in bad shape and they're clean. What the hell they got to offer me? Because, you know, I didn't like that kind of lifestyle at that time. And anyway, Jimmy took me out to Synanon first because he let me go. Because Jimmy was a friend of Chuck Dietrich. And if you don't know who Chuck Dietrich is, he was the guy that started Synanon. And that was the only recovery house in the United States you could go to. In fact, when I was using, you only had two places in the United States you could go to, Lexington, Kentucky, or Fort Worth, Texas. They were the only two places you could go to. And if you lived on the East Coast, you went to Lexington, and if you're out here, you went down to Texas. But anyways, so Jimmy took me out there. He said, let me talk to Dietrich, because Jimmy knew I didn't think I could make it on the streets. So he went out there, and Dietrich said, no, I'm sorry, Jimmy. He says, we got a bed. He says, Ed's told you for 2 months he's getting out of the penitentiary. He said, Jimmy, he says, I ain't got no bed. So I said, I already told him, fuck you. Well, you got to go through this, Jimmy. He said, let me take you to home, my house. He said, but first I got to call my wife. And I listened to him on the phone. He was at a pay phone. We didn't have these handheld phones. I got my first one the other day. My wife was afraid I was going to get lost driving all the way up here, so she bought me a phone. I haven't learned how to turn the son of a bitch off, but I like that vibration. That's kind of a that's kind of a good feeling, you know. I've been missing out on a lot of things. At my age, vibration is better than nothing. I've been going on with I'm nothing for years. I mean, shit. But anyways, Jimmy said, let me take you to my house and let me call my wife. So I'm staying on the phone. He says, I'm sorry. His first wife was a sweetheart, okay? I'm not going to say anything about the second one, but I loved the first one. And I loved his kids, too, his kids. But anyways, he says, but you got to take, you and the kids have got to go up to your sister's place up in Lancaster because I'm bringing Ed Mentor home. And she knew who I was. She knew I'm the guy that killed a bunch of people and I was on death row. And then she knew I killed a bunch of cops and I was in Alcatraz. I didn't like cops anyways. But anyways, he sent her up to Lancaster with the kids, and he took me to his house, and he put me in Kathy. Anyone know Kathy Kennan? She gave me her bed. I slept in her bed. That's the joke we have. I say I slept with Jimmy Donner's wife's bed, sister Donner's bed. I mean, shit, she used to get pissed off when I tell that joke. She's on the program. But anyways, 3 days later, he put me in an Alcoholics Anonymous recovery house called the Royal Palms. And I was so afraid that I couldn't make it, I stayed there for 4 years. And I got a job, my first one in my life. I learned to be a garment cutter in prison. So I went down to the garment industry in Los Angeles, and I worked, and I saved my money. I got paid a lot of money. I mean, I've never had anything paid more than 10 cents an hour. But then people wanted to give me $20 an hour, and that was 1964. That's a lot of money. I was really good at what I did. Oh God, that's that thing again. Oh shit. Anyways, in 1967, they started a program in the Valley called IDOP. And it was a drug counseling program, and Bob Stone worked there, and another woman there was a trustee of our, a nun-addict trustee called Dorothy Gildersleeve. Well, the thing was, Dorothy Gildersleeve was my counselor when I was in Lexington, and she was my real mother. You know, I'd followed her all them years, and she said, Ed, would you come to work for us? So here's this addict got a job with IDOT, and I wrote a book called Doctors on Your Doorstep, because I knew about all you assholes who were down in Haight-Ashbury dropping all that funny stuff, and we were going to have to put up with you in a few years. Because in the old days, if you didn't do heroin, we didn't want nothing to do with you. But then it's kindly climbing in the door. These people were doing the uppers and the downers and the inners and the outers and some of that shit. You didn't even know what you were taking. You know, we had to put up with you. Come in here with your fucking brain burned out when you're 20 years old, you know, and talking out of the side of your mouth like you had a fucking stroke because you took some funny kind of acid. And man, and then you went through some crisis. I remember a little girl walked in the room and she says, I'm a red freak. Oh, that didn't bother me. I said, well, we'll throw you on a bed in the corner and let you kick a habit. Well, she said, I'm only doing 60 a day. I said, oh, shit, what do we do with that? I called the fucking emergency room. I said, I don't know what to do with this girl. She's heroin addicts. I know what they do. They bleed out of their asshole, their eyes, their stomach, and their ears, and, you know, for a couple of days, and then they're cured, and the next time they got to clean up. You know, and then people come and say, oh, I'm using coke. Shit, we use coke to clean up. I didn't think that was a drug. I had to go to court or something. Man, I'd do coke for 2 or 3 days. I went fine. I went to court fine. You know, I didn't want to use too much because you used to bring your fucking nostrils out. You'd always you'd always knew what coke freak was. But anyways, that's an old story about drugs, you know. How long you got to put up with me? Tell me how many minutes I'm supposed to be blabbing here. Okay, remind me, because I go on for all night. You think Gene Haig is bad? You've never been in a meeting with him and I, because he always says, he always talked first because he had 6 days older than I was, but he always said, I want the first 3 hours. And I'm telling you, if you've been to a meeting, Gene could talk for 3 hours. And it used to piss me off because they only give me a half an hour or something like that. You know, but I can't say anything bad about him because, see, he's my brother. I love that man. I mean, I've only had one sponsor in my life. That was Jimmy Kay, and he fired me after 12 years because I wouldn't work the fucking steps. I didn't like him. I still don't like him. I like number one. And the last part of 12. That shit in between had nothing to do with Ed Mentor. Nothing. In fact, I was 23 years before I took a second one. because they were talking, and it was Jimmy's fault too. You know why? He said, you guys have to work these in their in continuity in their entirety. I never done anything all the way through, and I'm not going to follow directions. So when he told me about that, and I read that thing about that spiritual stuff, man, that want me. See, because I didn't believe in a God. But you know, he's been in my life so many years that I didn't appreciate him. 17 hours before my electrocution, there was 8,000 people outside the walls of Houston, Huntsville, Texas, praying for me. And I didn't know it was God interfering in my life. See, he interfered in my life because I was doing what I wanted to do, and he had a thing that he had something that he wanted me to do. So now he makes me suffer. I'm in my fucking 80s, and I'm still going around AA meetings. You know? all my friends died. You know? But now he's making me pay up for all that shit that I didn't do. You know? So, yeah, I'm a God lover. I'm a Christ believer. You know, my life is good, good, and good. And I've had it bad, bad, and bad, too. But you know, I haven't picked up since 1962. Some people say I'm the oldest. Some people say I'm the oldest true member of Narcotics Anonymous. We got a lot of guys that come from the mother program that might say they got more time than I have, but that's their fucking problem. Because see, I've been going NA for all these years while they were going AA, and you know, and they had a different program, and I love them just as much as long as they don't lie about it. You know, I don't know why they can't say, well, for the first 20 years of my program, I went to AA, and the last 25 years, I've been going to NA, because I took him to his first fucking meeting in 69. I know how long he's been around here. You know, you got to remember, I've been around here since yesterday. You know, all them people that died, I know a whole lot of them, a whole lot of them, part of my life. Because I didn't come here, I didn't know anything. You know, there's people think I'm a doctor. I'll tell you that story tomorrow. But yeah, there's a lot of people that I became a doctor. I'm so fucking smart on NA, and a lot of people think I was a doctor. But you'll hear about that tomorrow, because I don't want to talk about recovery. See, I don't like to talk about the bad times in my life. I want to talk about what I've done since I walked in the fucking door. And it's been a lot of things that I've done. See, I'm an I man, because what you're learning in NA, if you want it done, go do it yourself. And if it's in violation of the traditions, you got to live with it. Don't bother anyone else. So I've done lots of things. In fact, I violated every tradition they have many times. But you know that? I've got guys that have been clean for 40 some odd years that went some of my recovery homes and stuff like that I started. I praise God for everything that's happened to me, bad and good. I've had a problem with lots of things. I didn't know how to live when I got here. I've been married 6 times on the fucking program. You know? That's how much I knew about life, you know, and I never married a addict. Thank God. I wouldn't date any woman that had a fucking drug problem. I saved a lot of you girls because I kept marrying them. You know, but the problem is, I love women on this program. And we used to run our sisters off when they came around in the old days, because most of them were old whores. Yeah, let's be honest about it. So they used us and we used them, and we didn't treat our sisters like we treat them today in the old days. And sometimes we don't respect them today, mostly because they don't respect themselves. See, I hate it when I see a guy and a girl going together on the program shacking up, and I say, what fucking step are you working? You know? What about that guy upstairs? Do you think that's right? Come on, this is a spiritual program. If that offends you, tough shit. You know, because you got to know what this program tells you to do. It tells you to find a God of your understanding and not the fucking door. Now, if I tried it, and it's not the light bulb, I tried that. You know, I tried everything to substitute of the God of my understanding. You know, I'll tell you a little story. When I was a doctor a few years ago, I was speaking at a National Institute of Drug Abuse event, which I was assistant director of, up in the National Park. And I looked across the street, and there was a little chapel in there. And I went over there, and I was sitting there, and I don't know why, because I don't normally walk into churches, they fall down. But I was sitting there, and I looked back in, there's a rabbi from New York that run the Phoenix House. And we knew each other real well, because I was the person that was funding his program. And he came up and he said, "Ed, what's wrong?" And I had the same answer for most people. "I'm all right, I'm clean." No, he said, "What's really wrong?" I said, "I'm looking for God." He said, "He's not lost, you are." Ah, the most important words I've ever heard in recovery. So I had to quit my fucking job and quit being a doctor and came back and faced reality and accepted Christ as my God of my understanding. And I've been serving him for the last 25 years, and he's given me a wonderful life and a wonderful wife after my sixth marriage. I've been with this one for 25 fucking years. That's a lifetime, brother, to be married 25 years, but it's good. Everything in my life is good. Everything should be good because I've worked the steps the best of my ability, and I work number 10 every day because people get lots of attitudes being around me very often. So I have to go back and say, who did I fuck over today? I'm still the same old SOB that came here, except that I don't act out like I used to. I used to kill people. Now I kind of hug them and put up with them. But anyways, that's my story. I don't know what it's worth. But anyways, these guys beside them are a little more calm than I am. And they're good friends of mine. That's a good thing. I can look over my life and say, them were good friends. Why? Because they're working a fucking program. You know, they're not sitting here in abstinence like most people are. If I went around this room and really got to know you, I'd probably say half of you are in abstinence and half are in recovery. Big fucking difference. Big difference. Believe me, because I was in abstinence for 25 years. And I've been in recovery for the last 26. Anyways, I'm around if you want some questions answered. Holler at me later. We turn it over to Mel.